Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk Radio. Coming at you at a new time for the new year. We're going to be blasting off, taking off at 8 o'clock now. You know, just switching up a little bit. But Happy New Year, everybody. Oh, man, it's going to be an action-packed show. Me and Keys back from the holidays, ready to start doing this bigger and better. And without any further ado, let me introduce my co-host, Keys. What's going on? Happy New Year, bro. How you doing?
Damon Blackshear, the third submission win, third twister submission win in UFC history. He submitted Jose Johnson. I think that was like August, and that's my submission of the year. Oh, yeah. What up, bro? Happy New Year.
What's going on, my man?
I had to just, you know, I was so much anticipating what I was going to get off for the submission of the year, so I had to just shout out the boy. Damon Blackshear is a dog, too, so he had to get it. There's no popularity contest. That was dope. Only the third time it's ever been done in UFC history, the twister submission. So, you know, it has to be highlighted. Anyways, we'll get back to that shortly. But my New Year's was great, bro. How was yours?
Oh, man, it was very action-packed. I had some seafood early in the day, had a couple drinks sitting around the house, tried to stay up and watch the New Year roll in. I didn't, but my phone rang about 12 o'clock, so people was calling, wishing Happy New Year, so I got up and all that good stuff. But, you know, 2024 is here. All that stuff that happened in 2023, leave it there and press forward, y'all. Let's go.
Hell yeah, bro. I'm definitely with you on that. 2023 was a rough year for your boy Keys, you know, pretty much the whole time. A lot of ups and downs, definitely a good handful. Not a good handful, kind of a bad handful of downs, but it's all good. I'm on the same front as you. Let's go. This got to be a dope year. You know what I mean? Definitely. Big bounce back year this year, and I hope everybody else has the 2024 off to a good start as well.
Yeah, man. So we got a lot to catch up on, man. But the first thing I want to talk about is you want to talk about Devin Haney, man, going against Regis Prograis. Devin Haney's debut fight at 140. It will be a fight, but you watched it, so get the people the info they need to know about this fight, bro.
So I'm gonna tell y'all like this. First of all, I almost get choked up saying this, bro. Devin Haney. If I ever get the chance to meet him, bro, I might like. It has to be the most firm handshake of all time. You know what I mean? Like, this has to be the best dap up I've ever given anybody. You know what I mean? I might have to give him a hug. You know what I mean? Devin Haney secured me the biggest payday I've ever made in betting. And it's only been in this year, but still, out of any bet, he cashed me out the biggest payment I've ever seen in betting to date. And I couldn't believe my eyes, to be honest. I was really geeked. For me personally, I was geeked out. I couldn't believe it because I'm going to tell you this right now. I live bet it in the ninth round. All week long, he was a minus 225 to win by decision. Now, get this, bro. So I'm watching the boxing fight, right? And I'm not the boxing guy. I'm the boxing novice. But I'm watching the boxing fight. But I do know this. I know enough to know Devin Haney's fighting style. I've watched his last three or four fights. I know how he fights. I've watched a lot of his a lot of his sparring videos and stuff. I understand the style that he comes with. I know how he is approaching the fight. I understand. 15 KOs out of like 31 wins, I want to say. He's about a 50% KO percentage. He doesn't need to knock you out. You know, I mean, he can, but he doesn't need to. You know, what's wrong with if he outboxes you for the whole fight? Why do you have to get a knockout? You win the round, and it's not like he runs away. I feel like he's offensive at the same time. He's on offense, but he's extremely hard to hit, and that's what we saw in the Regis Prograis fight. And in the ninth round, I live bet it. and the line, bro, the line had shifted from minus 225 all the way to plus 175. That was a crazy swing. And I'll just tell you this, from a guy that is in the betting game versus where you don't gamble, I'll just say this. Devin Haney by decision, minus 225, swinging to plus one. Devin Haney plus 175 is incredible value. Like that, especially in that spot that I was in and what I was witnessing, the fight that I was watching, and what I knew how that was going to play out. I mean, you can't know how it's going to play out, but if you were watching the fight, I feel like you would have agreed. You would have said, all right, Keith, yeah, I'm with that. Because if you saw it, you would have understood that, okay, he's up 9 rounds to 0. You know, he's pitching a shutout right now. He doesn't need to go for the kill, but the commentary was pushing that a KO was coming. So that's what it was. So I think what I think happened, Lee, is that I think the commentary shifted the Vegas lines. I think that the commentary during the fight at the arena was saying that a knockout was coming. They said, oh, he's probably about to finish him. You know, we might see a KO here any minute, you know, with the way that it looked, because boy, Regis was just getting beat up bad. He was getting outboxed bad. He was getting hit a lot, and he really wasn't landing much. You know what I mean? It looked crazy, bro. It looked crazy. Devin Haney pitched a 12-0 shutout. And you know what the final count was? You know it was 120 to – I think it was 120 to 107, bro. It was 120 to 107. You know what that comes out to? I had to do the math on that. Just to fact check it. That's Devin Haney winning every round of the fight 10-9, and then one of those 12 rounds being a 10-8.
Yeah, he got a knockdown at round 3. So that's an automatic 10-8 if he won the round.
Yeah. So but, that fight, that was crazy. So shout out, man. That I love watching Devin Haney, bro. That's my guy in boxing. Like I became a fan of Ryan Garcia in 2023. I became a fan of Devin Haney in 2023. And I just love to watch him fight, man. So thank you. And that was a phenomenal performance. And for the guys talking about the, you know, 140, the thing is this. I understand they want him to move down, and now I'm starting to understand, like, how they play these games with the weight classes. The thing is this.
I told you.
No, they do play games, but this is the way I see it, is that the fight doesn't get made because they're in different weight classes now. But the thing is this, is that Tank will fight Devin Haney if Devin Haney moves back down to 135, right? Tank wants to fight at 135. When Ryan Garcia moved down, because Ryan Garcia was bigger, I think he was already, to my knowledge, he was already at 140, but he moved down to do the basically fight at Tank's weight class. But then Tank, they have the rehydration clause, so that when you fight there, you're all drained out at that weight class. It's not like the UFC where if he moves down to fight him, he can still gain the water weight back and still come in bigger. No, it's like if you move down to fight him, like you're really moving down to fight him because you don't get to regain any weight. You have to fight at that weight. So when Ryan Garcia moved down, he was really stuck at, he was at 135. And that's kind of taboo to me, because in the UFC there's no such thing. Everybody's rehydrating, you know. So you don't really know what weight guys are at. You know, you just kind of got to look at him and be like, all right, like he looks huge in this fight. You kind of just do the eye test. You don't really know what weight guys are at. They tell you the weight, but that's not the weight. Most of these guys, that's not how much. They all these guys are rehydrating. So in boxing, it's taboo to me. I don't know that rehydration. About the rehydration clause, but the thing is this, is that Ryan Garcia moved down to 135, and, you know, he didn't make any excuses. That's why I became a fan of him. I liked how he didn't make any excuses. He didn't say, oh, the weight cut was bad. He didn't say anything. He just, you know, it took the L, respectful, and it is what it is. But in reality, you know, he goes up to 140, and he looks really good. Devin Haney moves up to 140. you know, he puts on the best performance I've seen him. You know, I've watched the last three, four, best performance I've seen from him. I mean, that's so the personal best that I've watched. And he said that he felt the best. But now Devin Haney, Tank is, you know, Tank is like, okay, how come Devin Haney said he would move down to 135, come back down to 135 to fight Tank before, and now he's saying he won't. Well, I mean, I would ask you guys the same question because I'm pretty sure that Tank moved up to was it 147?
No, he moved on. Right. He didn't move up that high. He moved up to 140.
He moved up to fight to Barrios, right? Mario Barrios?
Yeah, that was at 140.
So he moved up to his weight class, right? But then what did he say after the fight? They say he said Tank didn't like the way he felt. He won the fight, but he said Tank said he didn't like the way he felt at 140. So what happened? He moved back down to 135. So how can you say that you only will fight him there when you moved up to fight that fight, but then you said you didn't? So if Devin Haney feels his best at 140, how's that different than you saying you feel your best at 135? You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's a lot of things to these boxers, man, that they do that's really, really slick. Because
but then my other point is this, is that all these guys are up at 140 now. All the guys that you could make fights with, all there. Like Teofimo Lopez moved up to 140. Ryan Garcia just announced fighting back at 140. Devin Haney's now up at 140. Josh Taylor was already, I believe, was already at 140.
Yeah,
like,
140, yeah.
Rolly is up at 140, even though he has a, you know, fraudulent belt. I mean, I think that stoppage was probably the worst stoppage I've ever seen in a fight. That was bad. Like, that was – there's no way that should have been stopped, right, the way they stopped that. That the way Rolly won that belt is crazy because – I don't know what was going on. The guy wasn't even – you can't even really determine if he was hurt. The guy just, like, kind of bowed his head. Yeah, I don't think that he was even hurt. And the ref just fight off. I'm like, what just happened? And I didn't see that fight.
Yeah, that was a bad
stoppage. I saw the playback, and I'm like, man, what the hell was that? The guy – I think he just ducked his head down. I don't even think the guy went down like he was wincing in pain. Like, if he got hit with a body shot and then he was wincing, maybe you could say that, but you would at least let him fall to his knees before you assume that. But that wasn't the case. The guy just ducked down. I think he just bowed his head because Rolly was throwing punches and he was trying to – he was moving around. And then but either way, Rolly's at 142. So a lot of these guys, a lot of these matchups are at 140 now. So that's one thing I will say is that, I mean, I'm not saying Tank has to go up to 140, but I mean, you also can't be mad at you know, a lot of these matchups that you want or that you've had are now at 140. You know, like Teofimo Lopez just fought Lomachenko. I'm pretty sure that was at 135.
Yeah, that was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was 3 years. Yeah, so I didn't just fight him, but, like, that recently happened. And
Haney fought Lomachenko in March or May. He fought Lomachenko at 135. Yeah.
Yeah, so they fought at 135, but then a couple of years ago, I remember – no, it wasn't a couple of years. I feel like it was – was it a couple of years ago? Oh, my God. I thought Lomachenko versus Teofimo Lopez. I feel like I just recently watched that. That was 3 years ago?
Yeah, man, that was a while ago, man. You got to remember, Lomachenko had took off when the Ukrainian war started, and then he came back. His first fight was against Devin Haney. So, yeah, it's been a while, bro.
I mean, look, I get it, but I'm just saying, a lot of those big names have moved up to 140. Tank's at 135. Lomachenko's at 135.
But that's not
know,
the
bro.
Argument, though. I think
the
argument with most is that Haney went up to 135 because he didn't want to fight Shakur Stevenson. The thing was, Shakur Stevenson was next in line to fight Devin Haney. So after Devin Haney had that underwhelming performance against Lomachenko, he moved up to, you know, he moved up to 140 instead of fighting Shakur. But I'm not mad at Haney. I mean, the thing is you have to, basically you have to do what's best for you in your career. Now, eventually Shakur is going to move up to 140. I don't understand why Tank is being so hesitant about fighting at 140 when he was willing to fight Barrios at 140. So I don't understand that part. So, but Haney, man, Haney is a great fighter. Like I said, you know, he was undisputed lightweight champion, you know, but a lot of people can't get over that Lomachenko fight. I watched the Lomachenko fight. I thought Haney started off great, and then he kind of, like, Lomachenko figured him out, and Lomachenko, like, really dominated the second half of the fight. I thought the fight, if worse, should have been a draw. But, you know, the decision went to Haney. But I think Haney at 140 against Regis, he showed you what he could possibly be when he's on top of his game. To shut out a boxer in a 12-round fight and that guy not win one round, who's a high-level fighter, that's almost impossible to do, bro. That's almost impossible to do. Now, the thing with Haney is, does he have a chance? Because when you fight Lopez Jr. and Tank, you're going to have a chance. I don't think you need to have a chance against Shakur Stevenson. I think because Shakur is more fast and hand speed and positioning than he is powerful, I really don't think Ryan Garcia can knock Haney out either. I mean, Ryan Garcia is getting better, but I don't think he's at the level of a Haney. But, you know, man, it's good for Haney to go out there and answer the questions that everybody had for him. And he did it in dominating fashion. Hopefully, you know, we get him and Lopez Jr. Or I think they're working on him versus Ryan Garcia next. I think that'll be a major payday for Haney, because if you look at it, the payday that Garcia and Tate Davis did, that was great business. You know, they sold 1.2 million pay-per-views. They made over $22 million at the gate, and they generated like over $100 million of revenue. And that was Garcia and Tank with no belts. If you had Garcia versus Haney with belts, you know, that'll be even bigger. So, but, you know, man, hats off to Haney, man. Great performance. But, you know, a lot has happened, Key, since the last time we talked. But I got to get something off my chest, Keys. And I think you would agree with me on this. Didn't they just have a media scrum for the UFC, about 3 weeks ago? I think it was right when we had our last show, the week that we had our last show before the holidays. They had a media scrum right before UFC 296. Then come to find out that they announced Michael Venom Page is signed to the UFC and will be fighting Kevin Holland. Why wouldn't they have Michael Venom Page do a press conference or be at that press conference? Bro, that is a big name in MMA. Why wouldn't you – to me, that generates buzz when you introduce a guy like that at a media scrum like that. And I just think that was just bad business, man. It might just be me being a little sensitive because – the way they brought in Michael Chandler, you know, they did all, you know, he did his press, he did a press conference and stuff like that. And you bring in a talent like Michael Venom Page and with no hoopla, and then you just nonchalantly introduce his first fight is against Kevin Holland. How you feel about that, man? Am I tripping or are you on board with what I'm saying?
Nah, I definitely think so. I mean, it is weird that I don't really know why it's kind of like kept quiet, you know. It kind of like just sneaking them in the back door, you know. I'm with you on that. I don't really get it because it's like MVP is, I mean, Michael Chandler, it's hard to really say, but, I mean, Michael Chandler, they're two guys that have had success in the past in their organization. But it's just MVP is – that's you should definitely – either way, you should be capitalizing on that. You know, you should be announcing him, and you should be making a big deal out of that because MVP could be a huge star in the UFC. He could be a huge star, even though – you know, he's in his late 30s. I'm pretty sure he's like 36 or something. Like, I think so. I want to say he's like 36. But he could still be a huge star. It doesn't matter. Like, he could still be a champion if you ask me. I mean, it doesn't matter. DC won two belts at 40 years old. Like, Glover Teixeira won the world title at 42. Like, it doesn't – age is not everything. It's a factor, but it's not – that does not destroy – his stock, you know what I mean? It's 30-year-old MVP versus 36-year-old MVP. The UFC does have a habit of, like, picking these guys up towards the end of their career. They did the same thing with – I know you hated this deal, which, I mean, I think it worked out in some ways, but it was a bad deal. Ben Askren for Demetrius Johnson, that was a pretty whack deal. But Ben Askren was another one that they – when they did pick him up, they should have just had it separately. They should have just kept Demetrius, and they should have gotten Ben out. They should have did it in somebody else. You know what I mean? Because then look how big Demetrius Johnson has done it in one championship. But that's a whole other topic. The point is that they got Ben Askren again at the end of his career. They tend to do that for some reason. They don't get these guys from the other organizations for some reason until towards the end. But I don't know, man. Sneaking him in the back door, I don't understand. MVP, especially with that name. And he is just, he's such a, his striking style is so unorthodox, so weird. It's so, like, but weird in an impressive way. It's like, it's going to be interesting to watch him strike with a lot of these guys. You know, if you wrestle him, you know, that's one thing, but. I can't wait to see him in there. And to get back to it, because I'm getting away from it, I don't know, but I completely agree. They're dropping the ball. They should be making it a much bigger deal.
Yeah, man. I was just thrown back by it. It was just like, yo, it's like that's a major signing. I mean, cause me and you, when he became a free agent, we were like, there's no way that the UFC should not sign this guy. You know, sign him. I would love to see him against UFC talent. I mean, I know he done had some lackluster performances in Bellator where, you know, you was like, damn, what happened, man, you know? But it's just weird, man, how they do stuff, you know, who they choose to promote, who they don't choose to promote. But, man, you just can't – man, a talent like that, man, you got to be like, yo – this who we signed, you fans. You know, y'all been clamoring for him to be on the team. We got him, and just for it to be just kind of sort of swept under the rug, it just kind of like rubbed me the wrong way. I'm gonna let you take off on this one because over the weekend, Conor McGregor announced he'll be fighting International Fight Week, June 27th, I think, or 29th. He'll be fighting like a champ at 185. Thoughts, bro? How you feel? Take off.
I'll say this. He did some kind of, like, evil – he did some, like, Dr. Evil type laugh. Like, I don't know if y'all ever watched The Austin Powers, but you see, like, Dr. Evil. Yeah, that's the Dr. Evil laugh that he keeps doing for some reason. And, yeah, it's exactly the Dr. Evil laugh. It's crazy. It almost makes me want to watch that movie because that's just – I mean, those are pretty good movies. But at the same time, yeah, 185 pounds, I mean, I don't know what the hell. That I almost seem like is a troll. I don't even know if I believe it. I'm not even sure I believe it. I mean, they got the – I told my boys, I was like, yo, this might be just a troll, bro. I don't even know if this is a real announcement. But then now, you know – two, three days have passed, and, you know, it still hasn't – we haven't heard any change on it. But I also haven't heard that it's official either, which you would think the UFC would probably want to lock that in once it's been announced and tell you it's official and maybe even put the tickets on sale, because you know people are going to buy those, you know, as soon as it goes up. But that makes me wonder if it's even legit. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we don't see the tickets, I would be surprised. If we don't see the tickets go on sale, like, at least, like, a pre-sale this month, I would be – I'll start to question if it's even a legit announcement, because that's only in June. You know what I mean? That's not like it's a year away. Like, and even then, people buy concert tickets, and they buy tickets to shows far out from the event. You don't have to be 2 months before the event to sell a ticket. You know what I mean? People will buy them, especially where prices get more expensive as it gets closer. You know how many people are going to buy tickets to something? You know, we just bought tickets from my dad to something that's in October 2024, you know, because that's a much better play with the, you know, with the prices, because as you get closer, you know, the supply and demand is going to go up. But that makes me think that I don't even know if it's official. But let's just take it as if say it is. I hope that he's actually preparing, but at the same time, I think, you know, if he is fighting Michael Chandler, this is it excites me, but I do think at the same time, this is going to be, you know, one and done with Chandler. He's going to get dusted in a round because he has the perfect – whether you like or dislike McGregor, you got to admit that Michael Chandler not only is McGregor in his head, which I definitely believe he is. I mean, it's only going to get more so. But at the same time, Chandler's also been, like, holding out for this fight. So even if he wasn't in his head, Chandler's kind of been obsessing over the fight, you know. So he might be in his own head. But he also has that perfect style that would get exposed and would get clipped by Conor McGregor, you know. Somebody who is going to wait for that snipe. You know, it's like that explosiveness is not good for this fight. You know, that shoot out of a cannon in the first round type of fight that Michael Chandler loves to fight, and we know he does because he's done it every UFC fight so far. I don't think it's going to work, man. I think it's going to backfire on him. I mean, if he's smart, he has a different game plan. He doesn't go about the fight that way. If he's smart, you know, you probably look to – you know, you probably either look to land a big shot fast, or you clinch up with Conor, press him against the cage, and dump him on his head early. You know, to establish that dominance and change. You know, make Conor think about the fight, because if Chandler's just gonna run at him and shoot out of a cannon the way he did versus Gaethje and the way he did versus Poirier versus Oliveira when he beat Oliveira in the first round, I think is pretty clear. He's going to lose. You know, McGregor's going to knock him out in the first round. So, yeah, that's probably my take on that. 185, I don't know. I mean, that might be some kind of mental warfare or something. I don't know. But if it's at 185, I mean, I'm interested to see how they'll both look. I don't know.
Well, once again, you know, Conor calling his shots. Chandler normally fights at 155 kilos normally. Doesn't he normally fight at 155?
Yeah, Chandler just fights 155.
Yeah, so basically, he's gonna go up to 185. Now, let's all be honest. This is a business move for Michael Chandler. This is definitely probably be the biggest payday of his career. So I understand, you know, acquiescing to a bit. But 185, bro, when you normally fight at 155, why not 170? You know, something like that. I don't understand, man, the 185 thing, but you know, I know Conor McGregor fans are happy, you know, that he's coming back and all this and all that. But Chandler is the perfect opponent. This is the perfect opponent. Chandler, you know, he doesn't have a sparkling record in the UFC, but the guy has fought nothing but top five, top seven fighters in the game. outside of Tony Ferguson, who was at one time a number one contender. So Chandler has definitely fought the who's who. He just isn't a good fighter after the first round. It's just something about his fighting style that makes you question his ability after the first round. I think Conor gets him out of there in the second or third round. I think Chandler will refuse to wrestle. And that's the one thing that we do know about Conor is that his ground game is suspect. I don't care about that little black belt he had on Twitter and all that. I don't believe in that. I think they be giving out black belts like Skittles now. So, but I'm happy. You know, I think for business-wise for the UFC, if the fight is made official and all this good stuff, because Dana White hasn't confirmed anything yet. It should be a great fight, man. It should be a great event. Now, the thing is, what do you put as the co-main event? Because you can't have this as a standalone, being that it is a four belt. It's at 185. You are definitely going to have to put at least one title fight. If I'm a champion, I wouldn't want to be the co-main event. So I don't know how they're going to fill this card out, Keys. Because if I'm a champion, unless it's a female's belt, a female's champion they're going to put under Conor. They might do that, but if I'm a guy, I'm not being in no co-main event and I hold a belt. Nope, I'm not doing that unless you give me pay-per-view points. That's the only way I would do it. But it should be an interesting event. Welcome back, Conor. I know his fans are all hype, but Chandler, unless you put your pride aside and you wrestle, you probably gonna get knocked out in the second or third round because you are not a fighter that has shown me that you can fight outside of the first round. All right, Keys. So you probably know more. I'm trying to find the fight announcements, but you had a good tweet out there earlier, man. And I want to start with that one. You suggested Max Holloway versus Emmett. What made you come up with that, bro?
What made me come up with that was that Josh Emmett apparently called out Max Holloway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Josh Emmett called him out. So I see, and don't get me wrong, before I thought, so two things. I imagine we both saw Josh Emmett's last fight. He just knocked out Bryce Mitchell. He flatlined him. And I also want to point out something. That was a devastating knockout, and it was really, like, uncomfortable. I'm sitting there with two of my boys, and did you notice that Bryce Mitchell appeared to be having a seizure on the canvas?
Yeah, it seemed like he was having some convulsions on the canvas, yeah.
He looked like he was having a seizure, and I was like, bro, like, is anybody going to mention that he, like, they – I'm pretty sure after we saw that on the camera, they didn't pan back to him until, like, his team was, like, holding him up because he couldn't stand up on his own. Like, that was really messed up. I mean, it happens in the sport, but it's just – that was really unsettling to see that, man. I feel bad. I hope Bryce Mitchell's okay.
Can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
Oh, Bryce Mitchell, man, son on ESPN. It says Bryce Mitchell says he will avoid contact training for 6 months after his vicious knockout to Josh Emmett. Moments after hitting the canvas, Mitchell's entire body went into convulsions before he eventually regained consciousness. He actually thanked Josh Emmett for not throwing any follow-up punches because they probably would have killed him. So, yeah. Hey, man, I love that Bryce Mitchell is doing this, that he's taking 6 months off from training. He's going to give his body, his head, time to heal, because you brought it up after the Volkanovski fight. You was like, Lee, Volkanovski needs to chill out. And then the next thing we know, he signed a fight to Poirier after being knocked out by Islam. So, yeah, man, I'm glad that Mitchell is doing this for himself. But go ahead, bro.
And you know what's actually crazy about that is, and you know, we may talk about this later in the show, or we may talk about it the next time, but I do – at least right now, I'm picking Volkanovski to win that fight. I just want to tell you all, I think I'm picking Volkanovski to win as of now. But I'll say two things. One, the fact that he just got KO'd stiff, and I'm not saying that to knock him because I love Volkanovski. I'm not saying, like, oh, he got – nah, I'm just saying – he was KO'd, like, bad. You know, that's not, like, that's the type of KO, like, you take time off for. And the fact he was just KO'd and is now doing a quick turnaround fight for, I think, February. So he's doing a quick, basically turning right around. So he fought on Teddy's nose in October. So he's basically turning right around into another camp off a KO to fight again in February. So... and then on
yep,
top of that,
17.
He's facing that versus a younger opponent. And then, do you know what the stat is for UFC? I don't know if it's like UFC champions or if it's like UFC. I think it's just like for fighters. Period. I'm pretty sure it's from flyweight up to 170. The stat. Do you know what the stat is for fighters above the age of 35 fighting for a title? Do you know what the stat is for that? Kobe Covington. I'll say this. Kobe Covington just added to the statistic when he lost to Leon Edwards, because Kobe Covington, I think, is 36. Do you know what the stat is for that?
I would say.
It's bad. It's really bad.
I would say 10 and 45.
That's actually – I don't have the exact number, but I want to say it's like –
I'm close?
Yeah, you are close, actually, yeah. Yeah, you're only off by a few there. You're only like five off or something. So it's –
okay.
So the last – it really is that bad. So the last time I saw it, And I vaguely remember the exact thing, but I want to say it was like 4-35, I think. 4-35 record.
Wow.
And
that ain't good at all.
And that's for fighters. So it doesn't matter if it's you're the champion fighting to get the title back, or you were never the champion, but you're fighting for the title. So it's just fighters that are 35 and up from flyweight to welterweight fighting for a title, fighters 35 years of age and older. I want to say 4-35 record, win loss, and Kobe Covington just added one more loss to that. So, if I'm right with 4-35, it's now 4-36, and you know I'm particularly happy about telling you that at least two of those four are my boy Tyron Woodley. Come on, man. Come on. Just how good was Tyron Woodley, man? That's
oh,
the question.
Man. So
just
he
how good
50%,
was he, man?
So he has 50% of the wins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Tyron Woodley, man, 50%. That's how good was he, man? All these guys are losing once they get up there. He was still, you know, hey. Yeah, he said he wasn't dominant, man. He got more. He's holding us down on that set.
Yeah, he got 50% of the wins. But get back to Emmett and Holloway, man, because
– Yeah, so Volkanovski is facing – he's up against that set at versus Poirier, because Volkanovski is now 35. So anyways, to what I was saying. So Josh Emmett brutally knocked out Bryce Mitchell. I hope he's okay. But now he called out Max Holloway, which I didn't watch the call-out, but I just saw the little thumbnail. I think like Bokamoto or somebody did the interview, and I saw their post. So he called him out. So that's what makes me think about that fight now, especially after that win. I mean, Josh Emmett's stock was definitely pretty low, at least in my book. I wasn't rating him. I had most guys beating him. I was like, Josh Emmett just, you know, if he can't, he just hasn't really shown us anything great lately, you know, and at least not in a little bit. And, you know, now after what we had, I mean, if Max isn't already planning to go to 155 and there's already not, like, talks of it and he's not already going, I mean, I'm down for that fight. You know, that's cool. I would be down. But if he's going to 155 and that's already a thing and, you know, Dana already brought it up, like, then go to 155. But if he wants to do what I think should just be one more fight at 145, it would be this fight, and then you would go. But if not, and he's already going, then go. But if he wants to do one more fight at 145, I like Josh Emmett versus Max Holloway, man. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, then it came out, Robert Whittaker taking on Paulo Costa. Did that come out before our I want to say that came out while we was on break, that Robert Whittaker could be taking on Paulo Costa. I think this is a make-or-break fight for Whittaker, Keys, not Paulo Costa. I think Whittaker, me and you, we love Bobby Knuckles, man. You know, I think if he could get past Paulo Costa and maybe win another fight, he might be able to get a title shot against Strickland. But he just didn't look good in his last fight, man. And it's the way he lost that makes me worry about Robert Whittaker, man. I hope that he's refreshed because he did take some time off. He has been off for a while, you know, since he got knocked out. So how you feel about I know how you feel about Costa, but how you feel about Whittaker, man, in this fight?
Yeah, man, I think me talking about Paulo Costa is pretty much the equivalent of you talking about
me,
Dan Hooker. Because I just can't – this guy, I can't get down with it, man. It's like it's irritating when they got to bring him up because it's like, come on, bro. And then it's like, bro, he won one fight in the past, like, 3 years? It's like, come on, bro. And that one win is against Luke Rockhold, like, 38 years old, completely washed. And Rockhold gave him a fight. There was a firefight with Rockhold. He didn't even – when Rockhold fought Jan Błachowicz, Błachowicz smoked him. Błachowicz didn't even give him a chance to get going. Błachowicz smoked his boots. And Paulo Costa, you know, people regard Błachowicz, but they overrate Paulo Costa. It's like he had a firefight with Luke Rockhold. Really? Like, really? And then most of his fights are canceled fights, or he misses weight, or something happens. You know, he was just supposed to fight what's-his-name at the October pay-per-view, and then he got sick, and he pulled out, and it's like he always pulls out. It's like every time, if you look at his record in the last, like, 10 scheduled fights, you will see canceled, like, at least 5 times. You know what I mean? And then a couple losses, and then maybe, like, 1 or 2 wins. And then when you even look at his wins, it's like he hasn't even beat any good guys. The only tough guy that he beat that isn't, like, Yoel Romero, and Yoel Romero is another, like, what did he fight him? What was Yoel Romero, like, 39 years old when he fought him? It's like, that's another guy. It's like, you just fight. I feel like he made a career off just fighting old guys. You know what I mean? It's like, Yoel Romero is, like, the only tough guy. Rockhold used to be that guy, but, like, you know, that was at the tail end. He was done. And even then, Rockhold's tough, but look, he had a firefight with him. And then Romero, it's like he had a firefight with Romero. That's the best guy he fought to me. And I think Paulo Costa lost that fight. I gave that fight to Romero. So he basically, to me, has one win in the past, like, 4 years. So I don't even know what y'all are talking about. I don't even know how he gets the Whittaker fight. To be honest, I don't even know how he got that fight.
It's crazy, man. I'm telling you, man. It's Man, somebody on his team secretly works in the UFC matchmaking department, because this guy seems to always get a top-notch fight for one of the most inactive guys in the UFC. I just don't get it, man. But we also had, Keys, the announcement of Ian Garry. He's going to be fighting, oh, man. Oh, no, they say he out. They say he's out. Oh, no, no, no. The one I wanted to talk about was Gilbert Burns versus Madalena. I think that's a hell of a fight, bro. I think that is a hell of a fight. I think Madalena has a lot that he got. He could gain so much from this fight, bro, if he could get past Gilbert Burns. I think that would really put him on the radar. How do you feel about Jack Della, Madalena versus Gilbert Burns?
Yo, honestly, I think welterweight overall is crazy right now. Welterweight and middleweight have some great fighters, bro. Those might be, like, the two hot divisions if you really look at it. Like, Jack Della, Madalena, Brian Battle. Shout out Brian Battle. He's on the come up, but that dude is from – he's either from Tough or he's from Dana White's Contender Series. I think he might be from one of the Tough seasons. Brian Battle's a dog. JDM's a dog. A couple other guys. You got Brendan Allen. Brendan Allen, they just announced Brendan Allen's going to fight Vittori in the main event coming up. That's a cool fight. I like Brendan Allen's on the all these dudes at welterweight, Shavkat, all these dudes are all savages, bro. Welterweight and middleweight are going to be so good in these next couple years, bro. There's going to be so many great fights. And these guys eventually fighting each other is going to be great. I think that Jack Della Maddalena versus Burns, people are talking about Burns. I love that fight. I think it's a perfect time. Have him fight Gilbert Burns. I think that's great matchmaking. I love it. Gilbert Burns is always game. He'll fight anybody. You know, he's not going to hide. He was the only guy that was willing to fight Khamzat at the time. He fought Khamzat, and I think, I mean, a lot of people think that you could give Gilbert Burns that fight. You know, you could debate that Burns beat Khamzat. You know, that was a close fight. And he really, I feel like he humbled Khamzat. I feel like He made Khamzat realize, like, bro, you're not invincible here. Like,
exactly.
You just fought me, and I just taught you that you're not invincible here. Like, you thought that you were, and then now once you actually got up and fought us at the top where you think, you know, you're just going to run through us, and Burns showed him, like, bro, you're going to have to start working. You know what I mean? You're going to have to start working harder fighting against us, you know? You get up there, and it's like now then he fights Usman. Usman makes him look human, too. People say Khamzat had an injury, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I think, you know, I think it's shown. You know what I mean? You can't just, you know. But the whole point is I love the fight. I think JDM is going to beat Burns, bro. I think he's going to beat Burns. I think because if Burns uses his whole game, and he uses some grappling in there too, uses his BJJ. If he were to use all his weapons, I think he beats JDM, but I don't think he will. I think he'll just want to strike with JDM, and I think JDM will win in the striking. I'm not saying JDM will KO him. I don't think he'll KO him, but I just think JDM will be a little bit better over the rounds and probably win a decision versus Gilbert Burns. That's what I think. I love the fight.
I'm going to go the other way, man. I think Burns will use all his tools. Because I think one thing he has to understand is that you are good at more than one thing. If you are good at more than one thing, that means you can win a fight in more than one way. So if you employ all those things, it makes it hard for your opponent to beat you. And I think if he was coming there, let's say the first round he come in there and, you know, he's filling out JDM, you know, filling him out, you know, in the striking game. And then the beginning of the second round, shoot for a takedown and going for submissions. Bro, your opponent is like, man, all right, so now he want to wrestle. First round he want to, you have to use all your tools, especially in this division. This division is so stacked with bangers. And we ain't even talking about the guys that are fringe top 10 fighters. We just talking about guys that are in the top 10. So Burns, I think he has to go back to his earlier game plan when he was coming up, you know, to employ all the weapons, all his tools, all his weapons to make himself a more rounded, better fighter. So I do love this fight, but Keezer was one fight I can't remember. You texted to me, it was two girls that me and you love going to be fighting. The names escape me, but when you sent me that, man, I almost went through the roof, bro. It's two of our favorite girls, and I can't think of their name. Oh, man, I can't think of their name.
You got, what do you remember about it? What division do you think it was? Was it Amanda Hivas?
Nah, it was,
I know the one. You're thinking of,
Fiero.
You're thinking of Fiero and...
Yeah, Fiero and,
Aaron Blanchfield. Yeah.
And Blanchfield.
Yeah, that's a great fight.
Oh, my goodness.
Great fight. Wow.
Keith.
Yeah, that gets me going,
is
bro.
A hell of a fight.
Yeah.
Them two girls can go. Both on well-rounded. Man, I know my man Keys, you know, he kind of up and down with the female fighting sometimes, but I think he'll agree with me on this. This fight needs to be a five-round main event on a UFC fight night.
Nah, that one's a banger. You know what it really was? It's that I think when I started watching more events and I started really tapping in and, like, learning who is out there a little bit, which, like, really has happened in, like, this year especially, I feel like. Well, no, 2023, I mean, in the past year, I've really, like, dove in. And I might have watched every single UFC card in 2023. So, like, I've really kind of dug in and started to do, like, you know, do my due diligence a little bit in the background and kind of know, like, okay, who's fighting? Like, who am I watching? You know what I mean? And that's where I, you know, caught on to Aaron Blanchfield. Like, you know, when I saw, okay, Meatball Molly McCann's fighting Aaron Blanchfield. Like, I don't really know who that is. But because that I had watched what people were saying on Twitter leading up to it, I'm like, oh, people are saying she's supposed to be good. So, I made sure to watch the fight, and that was that night. I was like, I remember telling you, like, yo, Aaron Blanchfield is scary. Like, she can fight. And because she smoked more than you can, and yeah, so I think, you know, but I've also watched many of women's fights in the UFC that just were snooze fest, you know, and that really, like, put my that brought my outlook on the women's division down a lot, you know, because there's just a lot of it's true, there's a lot of very just okay, like, or boring fights with the women's division. You see a lot of them are very, you know, very tentative. They fight, you know, at distance, right? Very, just kind of like, just like putting the time in, but not really like looking like they want to fight. But then, like, there's been some fights recently too that kind of revived it for me. And those two have put on some of those fights. Fiero versus Rose Namajunas was a very entertaining fight, and Aaron Blanchfield, the last couple fights have been really entertaining fights. So I love that one, bro. And these two are two that make me want to watch the women's division. These are two. It's like, okay, I need to be in front of the TV for that, you know?
Man, bro, if that fight in the octagon lives up to what we have seen from these two women, I think it has the potential to be in the top five or top 10 fights of the year for 2024. That's how good these two ladies are. And, man, I am so excited for that fight. It has to be a number one contenders fight. Even though I think the loser is probably maybe one fight away from being right back in the picture because of the competition, losing to Blanchfield or losing to Fierro, if they, you know, fighting each other, I don't see how you knock it, especially if it's a bang-bang fight. Now, if somebody get finished, that's a whole different story. Man, I love this fight, man, and kudos to the UFC once again for putting on a hell of a fight, and hopefully this will be the main event fight. But, hey, man, we got to jump to the UFC 296. We got a little bit of time left. I saw a lot of talk on Twitter about the main event, Leon Edwards and Colby Covington. A lot of people said it was a snooze fest. You know, I thought it was a very technical fight by Leon Edwards because, number one, you don't want Colby to go into Colby mode where he's dictating the pace and all this good stuff. But what was your thoughts on Leon Edwards versus Colby Covington? And also get into what you said about Colby turning his loss into a political statement, because I do feel, you know, that was kind of, you know, a Colby thing to do, but then I'll piggyback on what you say.
Yeah, that was an embarrassing performance, and I'm a pretty big fan of Colby Covington, but I like the, you know, I'm mainly a fan of the fighter, and it just,
not the person.
You know, he just didn't show up that night. He didn't show up that night and at all. That was a terrible, that was probably the worst performance I've ever seen from him. And then to try to turn around and try to, like, flip your loss into some kind of political statement and trying to play the part of, oh, like, the judges didn't give me, I thought I won that fight, the judges didn't give me the decision because I'm a Trump supporter. It's like, bro, what are you going on about? Like, you get on Fox News and say that you lost because you're a Trump. What? I'm like, bro, you didn't even, I don't even know if you won a round. Did you even get a round? Like, and he's saying he thought he won. Did you really think you won the fight? Come on, son. Like, that shit is embarrassing, bro. That is just even more embarrassing than the performance itself. You trying to say that you thought you won the fight. And then on top of it, saying that, oh, they didn't give you the decision because you support Donald Trump. Bro, what the hell are you going on about? That is just asinine, bro. I don't know what he is saying. He is just, I don't know. He might have taken too many punches from Leon. I don't know what happened. He is going off the rail, bro. I don't know what he's talking about. That is just terrible. You lost. You got dominated. You had the worst performance of your career. You should be coming out and saying that. That was a very bad performance. You know what I mean? And we'll go back to the drawing board, and that's it. You just see saying it, trying to make it a political statement and try to, you know, do political warfare in it, about it. And it's like, bro, the UFC, Dana White is friends with Donald. You making it seem like that would even happen. Like, no. And there's none of that even, no. So, yeah, does the wrong decision happen in some fights? Yes, but that's just the judges getting the fight wrong. There is no, you didn't get the decision in a fight that you got dominated in anyways. By Leon Edwards that didn't even look good. Leon didn't even look good, and he dominated you. You know what I mean? So that's crazy, bro. Colby, you got to take your L, and you got to just face it, bro. You making it a political statement is just absolute bogus.
Yeah, man. I thought Leon stifled him. I thought Leon kind of made Colby fight at Leon's pace, and Colby fell into that trap. You know, man, one thing about Colby, man, is the fighter, he's a good fighter, bro. I think his stick is starting to affect his fighting. I think he's more worried about outside the octagon than inside the octagon. And, bro, it's just, it's, as an athlete, you got to be able to compartmentalize. And what I mean is, when you're in the octagon, you're in the octagon. When you're in the world, you're in the world. But it seems to me like Colby is dragging everything in his life inside the octagon, which makes him not a good fighter. Good, I ain't gonna say a good performance by Leon, but you know, after what Kobe said about his dad. I picked Kobe to win the fight. But once I saw what he said about Leon's dad, I wish Leon would have knocked him out. But Leon did win the fight. But Leon, bro, you need to go ahead and stay right there at welterweight. Don't you even think about moving up, because you're not ready. You're not ready for 185. I don't think he has a chin, Keys. I think Nick Diaz showed us that he really don't have a chin. And I think if he goes up to 185, it'll probably be the worst mistake of his career, bro. So, Leon, stay where you at. Defend your belt. Try to reach George St. Pierre title defense record and see what happens, man. But, nah, bro, you ain't ready for 185. Then in the co-main event. Yeah. Man, Alexander Pantoja versus Brandon Royval. Now, to me, this fight was a snooze fest. Alexander Pantoja had 15 minutes of ground control. Keys, you know how I feel about man-humping, bro. 15 minutes of ground control, and he had one submission attempt. Come on, man. What we doing? Brandon Royval landed 281 significant strikes to Alexander Pantoja's 126. He landed 111 significant strikes to Alexander Pantoja's 95. 102 shots to Pantoja's head. Pantoja only 49 in his head. But Pantoja had 22 body shots to only 7. Pantoja had 24 leg kicks to only 2. And Pantoja landed 8 of 14 takedowns. Keys, man. Talk me off the ledge on this one. I think the UFC really, and UFC judging, they really overvalue takedowns and ground control. If you're not grounding and pounding or going for a submission, what is the fighter really doing outside of stalling? What are they doing? They're not making a fight. They're not pushing a pace. They're not doing anything but basically man-humping. Explain to me what's going on, bro.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to talk you out of it. I have the same feeling. I mean, I saw people praising Pinto on Twitter after that. I mean, that's okay if you want to praise it. That's fine. But, I mean, I don't take that stance. I think that was a snooze fest. I mean, I made money that night on the fights, but I remember still feeling kind of disappointed at the end of that fight night because I felt like the last two fights were both snoozes. I mean, pretty much. Actually, the last three fights were pretty much snoozes. I mean, Chalcott versus Wonderboy was pretty much, nothing missed until he choked him out. And then, Tony versus Batty was pretty much like the last good fight. I mean, and even that one, I don't even know how good that, I mean, whatever, but it's just, the last three was snooze. That Chalcott, Pantoja, Royval was a snooze. I mean, you're pretty much just neutralizing. You're just like holding guys and going for control time. You're just trying to neutralize them. You're not really doing much offensively. I mean, I don't even know if you're doing much defensively. You're just kind of just making, it's kind of just like a stalemate, you know what I mean? There's really not much happening there. So, yeah, I mean, that was a snooze to me. That was just a complete snooze. I mean, there's other things about the card that I'll touch more on next week. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. That fight was rough.
Well, you know, this is our first show of 2024. You know, we've been off for a little bit. We definitely going to get back on our grind. 8 o'clock is going to be the new start time, Keys, or, you know, we going to see how 8 o'clock goes?
Yeah, I mean, this one, I like the way this one felt. I mean, it might be. It definitely might be. We'll just see how it goes. We'll see how it goes next week if we go at 8 o'clock again, and if it feels good that time, you know, the vibes are right, then we might start doing 8 o'clock. We'll see, but I like this one.
Yeah, man, I do like the 8 o'clock start time. You know, 8:30 was cool, but hey, you know, we've been doing half hours basically since the inception of the show, so you know, it's good to switch it up. You know, new year, new thing, new vibe. So. We're next week, 8 o'clock. Next week we're gonna do our 2023 year review show. Me and Keys don't know what topics we're gonna have yet. We'll brainstorm those probably between now and next week. Because we love doing our year end show, our end of year shows, man, because you know, we normally have different answers, and that's what makes the show so great. And we don't talk to each other before we jump on. We just jump on and we talk. So, but me and him will get together, come up with the topics, and, you know, tune in next week for the our year review show. But I want to say, you know, to my man Keys, man, you know, I thank him. I thanked him on Twitter, but I'm going to thank him on air, man. My man Keys, he's a good brother, a good co-host, a good partner. And like I said, man, through this time of me and him growing together, he's become a good friend of mine. And, you know, he made basically this show happen out of me and him just talking on Twitter and going back and forth. And, you know, I had always wanted to do a show, but, you know, wanting to do one and actually putting screws to it and making it happen, you know, I just never did it. And me and him and us doing this show has definitely, you know, been a great spark in my life. And I love doing this show, and I love being on Twitter. And I love chopping it up with my guy every week, you know. And shouts out to my man Keys. I hope 2024 is a great year for you, bro, bigger and better than 2023. And like I said, we're going to do real talk bigger and better in 24, bro.
Oh yeah, man. I appreciate the words for sure.
So with that,
you know, go ahead. Now you go.
Me and Keys, we always in the show on positive vibes, and it's just something that I felt like I wanted to tell him, you know, let him know how much this partnership, brothership, friendship means to me, and I appreciate my man. So thank you, bro.
Thank you, man. You don't realize the difference that you make in my life either. So it's a huge pick me up for me getting on and doing the show with you and just talk. You know, we text a little bit during the week. You know, that's a huge pick me up for me. So. Yeah, it changes my life in a very positive way as well. So I definitely appreciate you for that and just realize that it's, you know what I mean, you make a huge difference. So thank you.
Yeah, man. And also, I did speak to Evan this weekend. He's doing good. He's in a good space. Yeah, man, I wished him a happy new year and I reached out to him. But like I said, next week we'll be back, 8 o'clock, new time, new year, new vibe. Leah Key signing off, as always, we're in the show with her. Peace.